The Olympics are in Vancouver. Is that British Columbia?
Well, Pam, there's really only a few things you need to know about Canada. There's Newfoundland and Labrador, Saskatchewan, Ontario, Quebec, Alberta, Manitoba, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia. Prince Edward Island's very small, but British Columbia tops them all. And that's where Vancouver is. But before I finish up my story, you should know the territories. There are only three, so I'll be quick. Yukon, Northwest, and Nunavut. If you want to have a ball, there's Saskatoon and Montreal. And if you want to pack your sacks, we'll be going off to Halifax. And if you're looking for a wife, be sure to visit Yellowknife. Natural resources! Perennial geraniums, nickel zinc uranium are filling up my cranium, the exports that they boast. Keep going?
Nope. No. Please. We're good. Thank you.
Ingrates.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to another installment of the Tools of Ignorance podcast. It is Thursday, February the 21st, and today marks the beginning of our season preview. We're going to run down all the teams in Major League Baseball and give a little breakdown of what we anticipate for the 2013 season. So, Hudson, how are you feeling about this this development, what we're doing here now?
It's gonna be huge. It's gonna be a big success, and I think that. You know, that's obviously what people are expecting, I'm confident in our ability to perform with or without performance enhancing drugs as I take a sip of water.
But you have naturally elevated levels of testosterone, I suspect.
Yeah, but no,
you're a beef castle, as they say.
Okay, so let's talk about the Houston Astros, because we're going to go in reverse order of last year's standings. I know, they already get the first overall pick, but yeah, they're getting to go first in our preview series too. So, yeah, life isn't fair, I guess. So, Jonah, the Houston Astros had an off season that I think many would describe as successful in terms of the overall goal. The plan to stock the farm with high upside and even medium upside talent, and kind of bring in some guys who will help the team avoid embarrassment in 2013, but will also probably be pretty solid trade chips come July, and will be able to will enable the Astros to add even more high ceiling or mediocre ceiling talent. So what are your initial impressions of this team as we look back on their offseason and as we preview their season coming up?
Well, I think there's no question that their priority right now is to develop a team going forward and not so much to stave off embarrassment, because I think no matter how you slice it with the roster that they have, this is going to be an embarrassing year, considering the transition to the American League. They're going to play teams like Texas and Los Angeles, even Oakland, a disproportionate amount of time, and I think that they're really going to struggle. You look at their major league roster, there's not a whole lot of talent there, but again, you know, they've conceded the immediate future, and you realize with the moves they've made, they're looking 3-4 years down the road, and they've done a pretty good job with the moves that they made this offseason. A lot of people liked what they did in the draft. Now their farm system is looking quite promising with guys like Carlos Correa and Singleton. And as you mentioned, they're going to have presumably the top pick in next year's draft. And I think that with a lineup that's sort of revolving around right now guys like Chris Carter and Carlos Pena, it's going to be difficult for Houston fans. And I think that they need to know that going in. I don't think that there are any delusions of actually being a respectable team this year. Not a ton of major league experience on their roster, but like we said, you know, they're not looking at right now. They're looking at a few years down the road, and I think that this offseason helped them to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, and I think we can kind of go through some of the guys who might be reasonably expected to move. I think the one stronghold, if there is a stronghold on this team, might be the second baseman, Jose Altuve. A very, very good hitter, Altuve, very poor marks from the metrics in terms of his defense. I didn't think his defense was horrible when I saw him play, but I didn't see him play live. I'm doing this sofa scouting type thing, but he's a guy who has the ability to be an impact player, kind of gets forgotten about in terms of prospects who are super young. But Jose Altuve is going to be, what, this will be his age 21 season, age 22 season. But he's a bright spot there. You'd have to think that Bud Norris is a bright spot as well. A relatively young guy in the rotation who has, you know, traditionally put up pretty good strikeout numbers. Lucas Harrell, a guy coming off of a very solid season in 2012. Jordan Lyles, still a young guy. And you know, and they brought in Eric Bedard, which is a nice move, a guy who will make probably 15 to 20 starts a year. Unfortunately, he's a talented guy, but he just has not been able to stay healthy. He's a guy who I could see them holding on to this year and getting to the point where it's July and somebody needs to add a starter to the back of the rotation. And, you know, if he's having a solid year, he could have some pretty good value. And, you know, the Astros obviously have all the leverage with not having to deal him. Philip Humber, another guy who I could see kind of having the same type of thing go on. He doesn't really have the track record of Bedard, but he's a guy who had a couple, I wouldn't say a couple good years. He had like a good year and a half. But last year he kind of he really struggled. But he had a no hitter last year, if I'm not mistaken.
He had a perfect game last year, striking out, I think it was Brendan Ryan on a very controversial check swing to end the game. It wasn't even close to a swing, and immediately he punches him out. And yeah, it was a little controversial, but Philip Humber actually managed to throw a perfect game last year.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I thought it might have been a perfect game, but I didn't want to say that he threw a perfect game and then be wrong the other way.
Philip Humber for the rest of his life is the answer to a trivia question.
Yeah, and you could also, he's also, one thing that I remember about him is he was the centerpiece in a deal for Johan Santana back in the day. A guy out of Rice, third overall pick in 04. That's not the type of information I remember about him, but I do remember that when the Mets traded for Johan Santana, it was him, and it was Deolis Guerra, who's still kind of a prospect. And then there's Carlos Gomez is also in the deal. But Deolis Guerra, a guy who's always projectable, and then just never really became anything. I actually saw him in Double A. Not sure if it was 2012 or 11, but still battling. He's finally a reliever full time, but he's an interesting guy who could probably make the big leagues this year. But I've gone into this huge digression about we're trying to talk about Philip Humber, who could have some trade value. If he can throw another perfect game, I would say that he'll have some pretty good value.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would imagine, I think it's going to be tough because when they approach July, they're going to be faced with some difficult decisions. Obviously, in no circumstance could we imagine that they're close to contention. And if guys like Carlos Pena or even Chris Carter manage to put up respectable numbers, I imagine Pena could be a very valuable trade chip at the deadline for someone who needs a left-handed power bat to inject some power into the lineup. The problem is, when you take out a guy like Pena, their lineup is, there are virtually no household names outside of maybe Carter, who, he put up pretty decent numbers last year playing a third of a season. He's pretty much the definition of a true outcome guy, home runs, strikeouts, and walks.
Yeah.
I imagine that Carter could also represent a pretty decent trade chip, for a team that's looking to put a little bit of a pop into their lineup.
Yeah. Now, the other thing we should mention is that this is a team that was really bad in a division that wasn't really good last year. And now they're a team that's really bad in a division that's really, really good. Going to the AL West now, dealing with teams like the Angels and the Rangers and the A's, who should all be very good, should all be close or... I would expect two of those teams, at least in the playoffs. And then the Mariners are a team that I think we can kind of see in that 75 win range, give or take a couple wins. But the Mariners are not are significantly better than the Astros. And so I think they're going to have a really tough time this year. And, you know, it's going to be rough for Houston fans, but it's the ends will hopefully justify the means for them as they kind of look to continue building the farm. And you know, but let me ask you something. When do you think it would be realistic to expect this team to start to turn it around? Because 2014 seems optimistic. And then, you know, we kind of... Is 2015 realistic, do you think?
I think it's possible. I mean, most of their prospects are still pretty young, and they haven't been playing professional baseball for a particularly long time. I mean, Singleton did really, really well at AA last year, and I think that obviously he's the one who's probably closest to seeing a major league diamond sometime soon. But guys like, you know, Correa and players like that, I mean, they're really raw. They're really undeveloped. And, you know, so many things can happen between now and 2015 that I think it's very tough to predict. And, you know, this is why you sort of try to get as many guys as you can so that, you know, you increase your likelihood by developing a critical mass of prospects. But I mean, you know, guys like Kostart, like he was really good at AA last year. I mean, he could be up relatively soon, but you know, I don't see, 2015 is reasonable, but there's a lot that can change between now and then.
Yeah. Another thing I look at, you know, they have a lot of guys who have super high ceilings, and a lot of times we'll see guys with super high ceilings after they get their feet wet in pro ball. The opinion changes on them greatly, and so maybe a guy who you look at as a potential number two starter in the big leagues as an amateur, maybe he's a three, maybe he's a four. Back end type, you know, after a year or two of more scouting data being put into that. But so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Correa. I'm really excited to see, hopefully, to get to see some of their guys in the South Atlantic League and then in the New York Penn League, because it is a very high upside system. And then they have guys who are going to be tested in AA for the first time, and guys like Domingo Santana and George Springer, who, if they can hit the ground running there, they kind of put themselves on track for that that 2000, even late season this year consideration, and then the 2014 they could be up. But you know, you mentioned it. The main idea is that so many uncertainties and so many guys that are far from reaching the big leagues, and so many things can happen, and so many things can change. But, I mean, unless you have anything else to add on the Astros, I think we can move on to the next thing that we're going to talk about.
Well, I was going to say is that I worry that there might even be a inclination to rush your prospects when your major league team is so lacking in major league caliber talent. I think that when you have a bountiful farm system, the inclination is to rush your prospects. And I worry that they might sort of succumb to that temptation a couple years down the road, especially 2013 is going to be rough. 2014 is probably going to be rough as well. And I think that if they are showing some prospects who are sort of indicating flashes of major league ready talent, they might rush them to the big leagues. I don't know. What's your impression there?
I would doubt it. Because, you know, I think we would have seen that already if that were part of it. We would have at least seen some of the guys who were in Double and Triple A last year brought up. I think that they're also, while they are concerned with, they want to win as soon as possible, they are an organization that realizes the value of taking your time with guys. And the service time issue as well. So if you're going to have an impact bat like Jonathan Singleton in your lineup for 6 years, or at least six guaranteed years, when do you want those years to be? Do you want those years to be when he's making your team you know, a 55 win team into a 57, 58 win team, you know, at least as he gets his, you know, that's a very optimistic assumption for a young rookie anyway, but, or do you want him to be adding, you know, adding optimum value, when it's the most important, when it's the jump from 87 wins to 91 wins, those types of years. And so I think you can, you'll probably see them take their time with guys. I could see some of their lower impact guys coming up sooner and helping, and kind of there are guys in the system who could very conceivably be ready in 2013, and so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I think at this point it's kind of a matter of, you know, I don't think we can predict the future, but I think this is a team that will take their time with guys.
Over under on stolen bases for Delino DeShields Jr. this year, I'm going to put it at 100.
That's an interesting one, because he's probably headed for the Cal League, which means that a couple of his balls will probably end up in the gap. And I could see him with a lower stolen base total, but with more doubles and more triples. So I'll take the under on 100, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him break that. But we'll see. He's definitely a fun guy, to watch, and a very fun prospect.
Yeah, the speed is something to marvel at, even though the bat struggled a little bit upon promotion to the Cal League last year. But we'll see. It'll be interesting to see you know, if his stick can, if he can figure things out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the next thing we wanted to talk about is, well, there was something at Baseball Prospectus this week. The lineup card was about our favorite moves of the offseason, and I contributed, but, you know, I didn't really contribute my favorite per se, as just so much as one that I liked, but Jonah did not contribute because of the wealth of Blue Jays-related moves in the deal.
Market saturation.
Yeah, in the piece, not in the deal. But so, Jonah, I'll let you go first and talk about your favorite move, and as I look up a couple of my top ones and make a decision here.
Well, obviously my Blue Jays bias is going to show through here, but my inclination is to go with Melky Cabrera signing with Toronto for 2 years and $16 million. And, I mean, when you look at how the free agent market developed for other outfielders, I mean, he was an absolute steal considering his production over the past couple seasons. Nick Swisher, Michael Bourne, Justin Upton, they all got deals of at least 4 years in length, an average annual value of at least $12 million. Melky, because of the performance-enhancing drug issue and the concerns over regression, you know, he only got $8 million a year. And, you know, considering what he's been able to do with his bat over the past few seasons, it's pretty tremendous, the deal that, you know, it was another really well-crafted deal, and a great job by Alex Anthopoulos to exploit an opportunity in the market. And, I mean, yes, there are obviously going to be concerns because of the PED thing, but, I mean, frankly, for me, those pale in comparison to batting average on balls and play concerns. Last year with the Giants, when he hit 346, his batting average on balls in play was a completely unsustainable 379. You know, that's 70 points higher than his career BABIP average. So there are concerns there, but, I mean, overall, Toronto desperately needed a left fielder. They haven't really had a reliable everyday left fielder that wasn't operating in a platoon for a number of years. I can't even recall who the last everyday left fielder was, maybe Frank Catalanato years ago. You know, they've had guys like Rajai Davis and Travis Snyder and Adam Lind and guys like that coming in to, you know, work platoons. And Melky's going to see the field every day. And I think that, you know, me personally, I'm very excited to see what he can do at the top of the lineup. You know, over the past couple seasons, he's had OBPs of 339 and 390, respectively. And he's going to be setting the table for the big guys in Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. He's got impeccable bat control. You know, his K rate is always below the league average. He doesn't walk quite as much as you would hope, but he's really been fantastic at the plate the past couple seasons. There isn't a whole lot to criticize. And with Jose Reyes hitting leadoff, I imagine that they'll probably employ hit and runs a little bit. They'll be aggressive at the top of the lineup. And I think it was a great move by the Blue Jays to pounce on a guy who might have drawn the ire or otherwise put off other suitors.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I agree with everything you said. Now, one move that I think that moves are often, people tend to analyze them kind of in a vacuum in terms of what one team got and what the other team got, and forget about the specific scenario of each team, and then they kind of try to look for a winner and a loser immediately. But the deal that my favorite deal of the offseason, at least today for the purposes of our conversation, is the Diamondbacks trading Justin Upton. The Diamondbacks, not only do they get a very good player back in Martin Prado to play third base and hitting towards the middle of their lineup, they get their three outfielders that they really like in the lineup. Adam Eaton is a guy who I really, really like to play center field for them. He's a guy who I think could be a player who we look back on in a decade and think, how was he not on our prospect lists? He's a little bit older. He's kind of short. But guys who can really, really hit and can play up the middle defense, I'm a big fan of those types of guys. And then they add depth to their rotation by bringing in Delgado. I like the move a lot. They kind of restock the farm a little bit with Nick Ahmed. It's kind of just they were kind of, I think, done with Justin Upton, and so they kind of removed that from their clubhouse, at least the feeling of having an unwanted player there. And I look at their rotation 1-5, and their lineup 1-9, or really 1-8. But and I think that this is a team that's really, really good and has put themselves in a position to win and compete for that division. So that's my move.
I like it a lot as well, and I think that their lineup is, I think it's very underrated. Probably going to be one of the more unheralded lineups of the National League, but I mean, they have a ton of talent, and I totally agree about reinforcing their rotation. I mean, now they got Tyler Skaggs ready to slip in there, and they also have Randall Delgado who's waiting, so I totally agree with everything you just said.
Mm-hmm. And they are apparently much higher on Didi Gregorius, the shortstop they acquired
in the Bauer deal.
In the Bauer deal, yeah. If they turn out to be right about him, which is very possible, they could have found something there. I think it was Kevin Towers who compared him to Derek Jeter, which is pretty lofty, but and I'm not exactly sure what it means, but if they found something there, this is a team that I think there's a lot of reason to have optimism about. But we'll talk more about them when we get to them, and as we continue this this preview series. But Jonah, I think we're ready to transition to the end part of the show. What are, if any, parting thoughts do you have for our listeners?
Well, I was just going to implore our listeners, if you guys have favorite moves of the offseason, please write them down in the comments. We'd love to hear back from you guys and get a dialogue going. Tell us why we're wrong about our analysis. We'd love to hear that as well. Get engaged, because we'd love to hear from you guys. You know, you hear us rant, and you have to put up with our annoying voices for however long. So please get back to us or send us an email at toolsofignorance11@gmail.com. That's all I got for you today.
Yeah. And we always seem to do this, but we neglected to mention the Twitter feeds. Jonah's at Jonah8264. And I am at Hudson Belinsky. So keep an eye out for some of our stuff. And thanks for listening, guys.
Adios.
I have an appointment with the horse doctor. How that horse became a doctor, I don't know. No, I'm kidding. He's just a regular doctor who shoots your horse in the head when its leg is broken.